Good morning. My name is Ken McKenna. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Sylvia Dominguez-Curry. I think the essence of this, and we're dealing with that magic word, pretext. My client is a female who's experienced, has more experience than the male candidate for this promotion. The male candidate is chosen. The claim by the defendant is he had some college education that was superior to hers, and he had a couple of years of law school, which he failed and didn't finish law school. She, on the other hand, had many, many years of experience actually doing the function. So they say he was the better one because of the education. We can certainly see and
what did your client say about his qualifications?
My client believes she was much more qualified than he ended.
Now, what did she say about the person that they selected?
That he wasn't as qualified as she was, and his education, his college education, had no real relevance for the job that needed to be done in this case, and that experience was a better indicator of who was the best qualified. And the point, of course, of that is we've all heard cases where the person with experience is chosen over the person with the academic credentials. That can certainly be an appropriate choice. And the person with the academic credentials would say, well, wait, I'm smarter. Well, okay, but experience counts. So the question here is, was their choice of choosing education over experience legitimate? Because that's the essence of this case. And, of course, we have to say, well, it's a pretext. You chose him because he's a him, and you didn't choose her because she's a female. Now, what evidence do we have of that? We have substantial evidence of that. We have the statement by the one of two people who made this decision. This is a quote that was never disputed. When I fill this position of Program Officer 3, I'm going to hire a guy, and he is going to do such and such and such and such. This person who got to make the decision that my client didn't get the job also, over a period of time, had said every woman who went to work for this division became pregnant. He's angry about that. Female employees call in to work when their children are sick. He was angry about that. He said to my client, if you were a man, you would know the answer to that question you're presenting to me when she approached him for advice. He called female workers stupid. He berated female workers generally. He said female co-workers are getting paid too much, that they didn't deserve the pay of men. He said females, because of their petite size, can't do the work that men can do. He said that the bitch knew she was pregnant when I hired her, was angry that a female employee that he hired was pregnant after the fact. He said around the office derogatory comments about women. He told, as it's quoted, the blonde and big tit jokes routinely. He used tits and ass as part of his daily language. Now, is that enough evidence that maybe they hired the man instead of the woman? And that education wasn't the reason? Yeah, absolutely it is. That's why we're here. Why aren't we in front of a jury? That's my question. How come this case was thrown out on summary judgment when we have the person making the decision quoted as saying, when I fill the position, I'm going to hire a guy?
Was there more than one decision maker?
Two decision makers. This fellow with this history.
Stacy or whatever.
Stacy. With this history, and another fellow whose name I'm probably not going to be able to pronounce, Alusi, I'm sorry, and we never deposed him, and I'm not familiar with the pronunciation of his name, who was his supervisor, who was not directly involved in anything. Now, the defense makes the statement in their briefs, the blatant statement without any support whatsoever other than saying it, that this was independently decided because you know, you have these two people instead of just Mr. Stacy, this bad, terrible individual who's shown his propensities against women. So because we have this other individual, it is now independent. That's ridiculous when you have this kind of behavior. The next thing they want to say is that guy doesn't mean man. You know, I feel like I just went back in time to is doesn't mean is. They make an argument that when he says guy, he means you guys. You know, like you guys, the boys, the girls, the children, the old people. Ridiculous. That's their substantial evidence against our evidence of pretext, that when he said, I'm going to hire a guy, he didn't mean a man.
Why don't you save your time for rebuttal and we'll hear from the other side.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Teresa Teenhouse. I'm a senior deputy attorney general for the state of Nevada. I represent the Nevada Department of Transportation and Rock Stacy in this matter. First of all, on this issue of the discriminatory failure to promote, the question here really is what evidence does Ms. Dominguez-Curry have to prove that the legitimate business reason for hiring Mr. Andrews proffered by the employer was
pretextual? This has to raise a tribal issue of fact.
That's correct. So you have to look at evidence of pretext, and then you have to look at the standard for evidence of pretext. Evidence of pretext, this is the standard from the Steckel versus Motorola case and others. Specific, substantial evidence that is significantly probative. So if you take that standard and look at the evidence that she has presented, she has isolated incidents of jokes and comments over a six-year period of time. Most of these way remote in time to the actual hiring decision.
Well, let me ask you this, though. On the what comment did she make about the in her depositions about the qualifications of the person that actually got hired?
She said he was more qualified than she was. She admitted that in her deposition.
All right. If she admitted that, where does that put her relative to being able to show another reason?
If I understand your question, the admission of the fact that he may be more qualified, she could still come forward with evidence of pretext. What it means in the terms of the other cases that I've cited in my brief is...
Well, but I guess if she says he's more qualified, then how can that be false, that he's more qualified? If she herself says, you say he's more qualified.
Correct.
That was your position.
Correct.
If she says he's more qualified, then what does the rest of it matter?
Well, if you look at it, if I understand your question, in the argument that Mr. McKenna just presented, he treats this as though it was a promotional opportunity. This was not a promotion. This was an open, competitive recruitment by the state of Nevada, and that means that she was given no points for the fact that she had worked in that section or division for 6 years. It was not a promotional opportunity. It was open.
But he said she was more qualified. So I'm
based on her experience, Your Honor. Based on her experience as a worker in that area, she felt she was more qualified.
Well, then I just asked you what was her statement, and you said she said he was more qualified. So how can both?
Well, no, Mr. McKenna just said in his argument that she said she was way more qualified. In her deposition, she admitted that Mr. Andrews was more qualified.
Well, what she said was, I believe he was very qualified, and he may be more qualified than me.
Correct.
But that was not the dash. I just knew because he had the right body parts.
Correct.
Is why he got hired in addition to being qualified.
And the issue of the correct body parts, Your Honor, has to do with the issue of pretext.
Right. But I think on the issue of whether she admitted that he was more qualified, in context, I don't see how you can draw the conclusion that she made an unequivocal admission. The question's about academic experience, and so did you feel you were more qualified than Phil Andrews? Because he's talking about his grades and his law school experience. Do you feel that you were more qualified than Phil Andrews for the job? Answer, I think he's very qualified for the job, but I was already coming in with a lot of hands-on experience on the job.
Well, so was Mr. Andrews, Your Honor. He had actually done this job in the state
well,
of...
Well, I guess my point is she didn't admit that he was more qualified. She said he was qualified, but she thought she also, she was more qualified for other reasons.
Correct. But she was going on the fact, just like Mr. McKenna just did, that this was some sort of a promotion. This was not a promotion.
Well,
this
but I guess but what I'm saying is if she actually admitted he was more qualified, if, you know, if she flat out said he was more qualified than I was without, then I think she wouldn't have proven that your reason was false and therefore she would fail on the pretext. But she doesn't admit that. She doesn't admit he was more qualified. She admits he was qualified.
Correct.
But she thinks she's, you know, she says why she thinks more he was more, she was more qualified because he flunked out of law school anyway or whatever. Okay. I don't see how on the hostile workplace, I don't see how you get past that. There were a lot of statements there. I mean, if that's not a hostile work environment,
Well, Your Honor, according to the Supreme Court, you have to look at the workplace as a totality of circumstances. You can't just look at it in isolation. So you have to consider all the circumstances, the frequency of the conduct, its severity, was it physically threatening or humiliating or a mere offensive utterance, and more importantly, did it interfere unreasonably with the plaintiff's work performance? And if you look at the evidence of that, she does not have evidence of that. It was in her brief, just as in her opposition to summary judgment, she makes sweeping assertions, but there's no specific evidence to take to trial. For example, there's no dispute that there was no physical contact in this case. There was never any unwanted physical conduct. There was never any unwanted sexual remarks made specifically to Ms. Dominguez Curry. There's only one incident of something physical, and that was many years ago when Mr. Stacy was angry and he kicked one of the co-workers' chairs, not because of her gender, and Ms. Dominguez-Curry admitted that in her deposition. It wasn't because Paula Morton was a female. It was because Mr. Stacy was angry with Paula Morton for erasing an entire computer program. So if you look at the context also, which is very important under the Harris versus Forklift systems, look at the context of these comments. The workplace office was very, very small. Everybody was overhearing everybody else's conversations. The women would be talking about things about their families and whatnot, and Mr. Stacy would make a comment, and they would find it offensive.
What do you think? Is there any significance to the fact that she never complained about this?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because she worked in a office with other women, and they talked about it. I think they complained to each other. The fact that she never complained directly to Mr. Stacy himself, I don't believe is the case, is really important in this case. She had a good working relationship with him. I think the reason why she probably didn't complain to him is explained pretty clearly. She said in her deposition she always felt friendly towards Mr. Stacy. They traveled together frequently when they went out to job sites in the field. They talked. They shared personal information. Is this the kind of situation of a hostile work environment? No. And more importantly, there's no dispute that the conduct of Mr. Stacy did not unreasonably interfere with her work performance. She told me in her deposition she always did her job. She didn't stop going out to job sites with Mr. Stacy because he was so offensive to her. She didn't stop coming to work because he was too offensive. She didn't, you know, try to get a transfer or something. She didn't. She did her job, and she felt like she did it so well, she went for an opportunity that was way out of her grade. And the conduct here doesn't come even close to the cases that are cited in my brief where there was name-calling and frequent requests for sex and unwanted touching. The standard
but, you know,
is that
there's a big difference between
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
In my mind, there are, of course, the harassment cases, which are to which you allude. This is not a harassment case. This is in the classic sense of sexual harassment. We're talking about a discrimination, which is entirely different. You can have discriminatory animus and express it and create a hostile work environment. The fact that you don't necessarily touch anybody doesn't get you very far, because that's not the claim in this case. The claim is bias against women in general.
Well, the claim, there's two claims, Your Honor. There's the claim of bias against women that has to do with the failure to receive the job, and then there's the hostile work environment claim, which is a separate claim under Title VII, as I see it. And for the standard for that is the standard of a reasonable woman. And nothing that Ms. Dominguez-Curry has alleged, none of these jokes that she talked about and any of the comments that Mr. Stacey made, none of this is worse than what you'd see or hear if you turned your television set on at 8 p.m. and watched primetime TV. The sitcoms
Except
that are on.
It's not directed to you.
Pardon
your
me?
Television doesn't talk back to you.
Well, I would like to think that you wouldn't.
That's right.
I would like to think that state departments would not justify this sort of workplace.
What I'm saying is that she admitted in her deposition.
At home I can turn the TV off. But if I have to sit and listen to someone at work, I can't turn them off, especially if they're my boss.
Well, you can't, and it's even worse if you've got physical conduct and threatening type of behavior. But she didn't. And
no,
she
but
didn't
I,
turn him off
that,
because
why,
she...
Why do you think that that is the... I mean, that may be a factor, and it is when we're talking about... sexual harassment cases involving somebody who wants to extract sexual favors for promotion, but that's not the allegation here. It's a hostile work environment.
That's
because
correct.
Because he's making discriminatory comments every day.
That's correct, and that's
so. In that context, I think it seems to me that the physical contact requirement is less importance.
That's what I'm saying. If you have no physical conduct in a case like this, you're strictly talking about offensive comments and offensive behavior.
I think they're two different categories. They're not concentric circles.
Well, but the standard is high on Title VII. How can the standard for network television be higher than Title VII?
We're not employed by network television.
I'm
you know, the difference
that,
is the reason that the Title VII exists in the employment context, and it was a matter of control. It's the abuse of power in the workplace by making these kind of comments. Now, whether it rises or not in this case is a different factor. But I think I'm just suggesting your television analogy is imperfect.
Well, I'm suggesting it, Your Honor, because the standard is that of a reasonable woman. And so if you take a reasonable woman, yes, she would be offended by this, yes. But does this mean that she is entitled to relief under Title VII?
That's not
no.
the question right now. The question is whether or not she's raised enough
Probably.
Evidence to get beyond summary, presented enough evidence to get beyond summary judgment. Whether she can prove it at trial before a jury is another question.
Right. But in other cases where there's been similar types of behavior, the courts are saying this is not Title VII material. This is the ordinary tribulations of the workplace. This is not the kind of thing that Title VII was meant to alleviate. Title VII doesn't guarantee that all offensive behavior is out of the workplace. It only guarantees that discriminatory offensive behavior is out of the workplace.
Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal?
Mr. Stacey, who we've talked about in his behavior, also made the comment that I didn't bring up in my first opportunity to speak to you. He said that women should only be in subservient positions and that he would never work for a woman supervisor. He would quit his job before he would work for a woman supervisor. This is the man that got to make the decision whether a female or a male was chosen for this job. I don't know. I do a lot of employment law. I don't know that I've ever had facts this strong about the obvious pretextual issue.
Should we consider that evidence in this case?
My opinion?
Yeah.
I wish you would. You know, and I know I have a couple of minutes here, and I have to say something broader than what we're talking about in this case. You know, I'm very proud to be a trial lawyer. I became a trial lawyer. I grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, and I became a trial lawyer to fight injustice. And I have to tell you, I think the judicial system, and I was always proud of the judicial system, is the only branch of government where the small guy, the little guy, the weakest in our society can be heard. They get their opportunity in a courtroom in front of their peers, and they get to find out if they're right or wrong. And I have to tell you, I am very disappointed and I am saddened by the state of our judicial system in the last few years. I've been doing employment law for probably 10 years. You used to get to go to trial. Juries used to tell you if you won or lost. But you know what? Somehow, somewhere, the system didn't like that. And so now you don't get to go to trial anymore. You have mini trials on paper in front of judges. And magistrates and federal judges tell you that you have to prove your case, like to a jury, but now to a judge. Summary judgment used to be disfavored in the law. I remember those quotes. Summary judgment is disfavored. People should go to court and have jury trials. Now summary judgment is favored. Why? Convenience, expediency, trials are messy and ugly, time-consuming and expensive. Sure. Is that a reason people don't get to go to court anymore? Is the third branch, the judicial branch of government, going to be politicized just like the executive and legislative? I'm saddened. I hope that this case gets to go to trial. I hope every case gets to go to trial and that we stop granting summary judgment and that you stop upholding these
right.
grants of summary
judgment. I think we've had enough of your editorial.
Did I use up my time?
Yes, well.
Thanks.
All right. We're going to take about a 10-minute recess. And I'd love to. Sorry?
Just I don't know, just quick.
That's right. No, we'll be in recess for 10 minutes, and then we'll hear the last case in the calendar.